From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
Hiya, man. This is Frank Sinatra. I hope you like these tunes that I've chosen to do for you on these very wonderful V-discs. And I hope that you get as much a kick out of hearing them as I do out of singing them for you.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, 'cause I only have eyes for you, dear.
On today's Fresh Air, we remember Frank Sinatra. From the archives, we'll hear interviews with his daughter Nancy and with several people who worked closely with him, lyricist Sammy Kahn, composer Matt Dennis, and arranger Billy May. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. Fans are gathered outside Frank Sinatra's gated home in Beverly Hills, California, to pay tribute to the legendary singer who died last night in Los Angeles after suffering a heart attack at the age of 82. Entertainer Mel Torme called him the ultimate balladeer. Sinatra's hits included Strangers in the Night, I've Got You Under My Skin, and Young at Heart.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart.
President Clinton sent condolences to Sinatra's family. He said Sinatra really did it his way. The president and Japanese Prime Minister Ryutaro Hashimoto met today in Birmingham, England, prior to the opening of the Group of Eight Industrial Nations Summit. The leaders expressed concern about the anti-government backlash in Indonesia. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
President Clinton said that he and Prime Minister Hashimoto were both concerned about the violence in Indonesia and that they were heartbroken over the loss of life there. Some U.S. officials have said privately they believe the violence indicates that the demise of Indonesia's longtime ruler, Suharto, is imminent. President Clinton had this response when asked whether Suharto would have to step down.
The present government and the president find a way to open a dialogue with all elements of the society, and that it lead to a general, a genuine sense of political reform and reconciliation.
Although the G8 leaders will discuss Indonesia, it is not clear what they can do now that the situation looks like a political problem more than an economic one. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Birmingham.
The State Department is also concerned about the Indonesian situation, advising U.S. citizens to leave the country's two largest cities as soon as possible. Hundreds of people have been killed in 4 days of rioting in Indonesia. Earlier today, looters set 4 shopping malls on fire. NPR's Julie McCarthy walked through the charred remains of one of the malls.
The grounds are strewn with all sorts of debris, people's clothing, their shoes, cans, puzzles, the merchandise that spilled out of these shops, more than 100 of them in the Jogja department store that is now a smoldering ruin in eastern Jakarta. It was the biggest shopping center in this part of the city.
NPR's Julie McCarthy in Jakarta. Indonesian authorities say as many as 200 people may have died in the shopping mall fires. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 17 points in heavy trading at 9,156. The Nasdaq Composite is down 7. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, there's not a lot of movement today on Wall Street. Shortly after the opening bell, the Dow is still hovering around its close from yesterday. NPR's Madeline Brand has more.
Investors are keeping one eye on Indonesia, the other on next week's Federal Reserve meeting. The Fed meets Tuesday to discuss raising interest rates. Many analysts do not expect any action because of the instability in Indonesia. Markets there were at a standstill today as rioting continued for a fourth straight day. The Jakarta Stock Exchange was barely functioning, completing just 18 trades. And many major Western businesses are closing up and flying their employees out of the country. At home, more trouble in the technology sector a day after Hewlett-Packard stocks nosedived on reports of diminished earnings. National Semiconductor is also warning of lower revenues. Its stock is now off by a dollar at a little more than $17 a share. Madeline Brand, NPR News, Washington.
The top man at the Federal Communications Commission says he does not see any immediate end to rising cable television rates. Chairman William Kennard tells The Washington Post there are no plans for the FCC to cap prices before deregulation of the industry takes place next March. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a so-called super aspirin made by Merck to prevent blood clots. The new medicine is inspired by snake venom. Merck says the medication, if it were given to all 1 million Americans hospitalized yearly with unstable angina, the results could be impressive. It claims the drug could prevent up to 40,000 heart attacks and deaths a year. To celebrate its 125th anniversary, Levi's is giving away almost 4,000 pairs of its jeans to jeans across the country. The deal applies to jeans, jeanettes, and Gina's. I'm Craig Windham, National Public Radio News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, where imaginations can run wild. Over 200 locations nationwide. 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. He's gone. Frank Sinatra died of a heart attack last night at the age of 82. We're going to pay tribute to him by playing some of his great recordings and listening back to interviews with some of the people who worked with him over the years. When Sinatra recorded a song, it often became so identified with him, it was off limits to other singers. So what was it like to write songs for him? I asked lyricist Sammy Kahn about that back in 1985, 8 years before Kahn's death. In the years he wrote for Sinatra, Kahn had two main songwriting partners, Julie Stein and Jimmy Van Heusen. Kahn wrote the lyrics for All the Way, Come Fly With Me, Love and Marriage, The Tender Trap, I Fall in Love Too Easily, Saturday Night is the Loneliest Night of the Week, Polka Dot and Moonbeams, Call Me Irresponsible, and I Guess I'll Hang My Tears Out to Dry.
When I want rain, I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love is gone, can't pull myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Friends ask me out, I tell them I'm busy. I must get a new alibi. I stay at home and ask myself, who is he? Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
Lyricist Sammy Kahn used to love demonstrating his new songs for singers. In 1985, he told me what it was like to sing a new song for Sinatra.
I sing the song for the first time, and I stand in front of Sinatra, and I am a lethal demonstrator. One of the most memorable moments of demonstrating songs is when I sang the songs to Our Town. Our Town for the first time. I'll never forget, we came and we sang to him. It was kind of around twilight time. I'll never forget. It was kind of quiet. With no one around, just him sitting in an easy chair. And when Sinatra reflects, he rolled the bottom of his thumb over his lower lip. And that's how he reflects. And his highest praise is, yeah, yeah, high praise. And he doesn't turn down a song, never has.
You know the song you wrote All the Way? Of course, you know the song you wrote All the Way. Did you ever have in the back of your mind the expression going all the way?
No, never.
I always wondered about that.
That song,
how did you get that hook?
I'll tell you, that song was written actually to cover many, many dramatic points. First of all, the song was written for a film called The Joker Is Wild. And I said to Van Heusen, Jimmy Van Heusen, I said, they can't possibly want to call this film The Joker Is Wild. Sounds like a card game picture. Las Vegas gambling picture, The Joker is Wild. So we better think of a good title. And for days we kicked some titles and finally said, I've got the title. Frank Sinatra, All the Way. He loves All the Way. He acts All the Way. You know, it's he gets the women all. You know, it's an all-encompassing title, All the Way. And then we came up with the melody, which had a dramatic notion to it. In the picture, you know, he loses his voice. So when you hear him singing the first time, he sings, When somebody loves you, it's no good unless he loves you. Big notes. All the way. And you hear him singing that large and loud. Now, when he tries to come back after his throat has been cut, in a sense, he starts to sing, When somebody loves you. These are even notes. It's no good unless you love you. And he takes a breath, and you see on his face that he's not going to be able to hit all the way those notes again. That's when he goes, as Joe Louis, the comic, into comedy. That was all the ideas. So you know what they call the film? The Joker is Wild.
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless he loves you. All the way. Happy to be near you when you need someone to cheer you. All the way. Taller than the tallest tree is, that's how it's got to feel. Deeper than the deep blue sea is, that's how deep it goes, if it's real. When somebody needs you, it's no good unless he needs you. All the way. Through the good or lean years, and for all the in-between years. Come what may. Who knows where the road will lead us, only a fool would say. But if you let me love you, it's for sure I'm gonna love you all the way.
Did you ever want to change a lyric that you wrote?
Only one time.
Which one was that?
That's in the song, one of my very, very favorite songs, The Last Dance. We started the idea of writing an opening song for an album and a closing song for an album, like Come Fly With Me. Opens with Come Fly With Me, of course, and the closing song, which is It's Nice to Go Traveling. So, and then we wrote Come Dance With Me. And then we needed a closing song. And we quickly discovered that Irving Berlin, the legendary Irving Berlin, I discovered that he'd written every song you can possibly write about dancing. Cheek to Cheek, Change Partners, I'm Putting on My Top Hat. So usually I write a song very, very swiftly. But here I am, and I can't come up with the last song. And Frank Sinatra, who's used to me giving him the song swiftly, says, Where's that last song? And I keep saying, The last song. We're looking for the last song. And where's the I don't write as haphazardly. I think about it, and when I come up with a title or something, I want it to be a little special. And every time I turn, I'm running into Irving Berlin. finally I turned to Van Heusen one day and said, has there ever been a song called The Last Dance? And Van Heusen, who was very, very familiar with the literature of songs, said, no. It's been the Save the Last Waltz for me, but not The Last. I said, sit down. And I said, it's The Last Dance. We've come to The Last Dance. They're dimming the lights down. They're hoping we'll go. It's obvious they're aware of us, the pair of us, alone on the floor. But I want to hold you like this forevermore. So Sinatra is recording this song. And I had lines, they're wondering just when will we leave. But till we leave, keep holding me tight through the last dance. Each beat of the last dance. And save me the first dance in your dreams tonight. So it's, when you speak, you would say, they're wondering just when we will leave. You wouldn't say, they're wondering just when will we leave. So he said, they're wondering just when we will leave. I said, no, it isn't. If I hold it. I said, they're wondering just when will we leave, but till we leave. He said, what kind of cockamamie word is... I said, no one speaks like that. I said, no. I said, no one speaks like that, but we aren't speaking, Frank, are we? We're singing, aren't we, Frank? And that's the only time we ever kind of good-naturedly quarreled about a line.
It's the last dance. We've come to the last dance. They're dimming the lights down. They're hoping we'll go. It's obvious they're aware of us, the pair of us, alone on the floor. Still I want to hold you like this forever and more. It's the last song. They're playing the last song. The orchestra's yawning. They're sleepy, I know. Just when will we leave, but till we leave, keep holding me tight through the last dance. Each beat of the last dance, save me the first dance in your dream tonight. But till we leave, keep holding me tight through the last dance. Each beat of the last dance, and save me the first dance in your dreams tonight.
Our interview with lyricist Sammy Kahn was recorded in 1985, 8 years before his death. Nancy Sinatra talks about her father after a break. This is Fresh Air.
¶¶
A couple of years ago, when Frank Sinatra turned 80, his daughter Nancy put together a book commemorating the occasion called Frank Sinatra, an American Legend. We spoke then about her father. Her book came with a CD that included Sinatra's first radio appearance. It was on the Major Bowes Amateur Show in 1935. Sinatra had auditioned as a solo act, but he was teamed up with a vocal trio, which he resented. The group was given the name the Hoboken Four. Here's how they sounded.
Shine and sway your blues, why don't you shine, start with your shoes, shine each place up, make it look like new,
boom, 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 boom,
shine your face up, mm-hmm. I want to see you wear a smile as you, oh, shine, your D's and those's, you'll find everything, mm-hmm. turn out right fine, yeah. Folks will shine up to you, everybody's going to hide you, do you, you'll make the whole world. Chocolate drops, let me hear you. Oh, what? Folks will shine up to you. Everybody's gonna hide you, do you? You'll make the whole world shine.
Shine and sway your bluesy.
Ah.
Shine, start with your shoesy.
Ah.
You'll make the whole world shine.
Was Frank Sinatra's first radio appearance. Did your father talk with you much about those early days when he was trying to find himself professionally?
He talked a lot about his family in those days, how disappointed they were that he didn't stay in school. He told me a lot about his early jobs, washing dishes, just anything to scrounge up a few pennies. Now, he hates pennies so much, he doesn't even look at them. He ignores them. He puts them away in a jar, gets rid of them immediately.
I want to play another recording of his last broadcast with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra when he's introducing his replacement, Dick Hames. This was recorded in 1942. Let's listen to it.
Folks, this is Frank Sinatra's farewell broadcast with his band. After tonight, he's going to be strictly on his own. And, Frank, I want to tell you that everyone in the band wishes you the best of luck.
Thanks, Mac, and I'd like to say that I'm going to miss all you guys after kicking around for 3 years. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet the boy who's going to take my place as the vocalist with Tommy in the band. He's a fine guy, a wonderful singer, and he was good enough for Harry James and Benny Goodman, and that's really saying plenty. Folks, I'd like you to meet Dick Hames.
Well, Frank, I don't know if anyone can really take your place with this band, but I'm going to be in there trying. You can bet on that. As for you, well, I know that you'll be knocking them dead on your own hook.
So, thanks,
well,
Dick.
I agree with you there, Dick, and thanks a lot, Dick Hames. Frank, before you hit the road, how about one more song just for Auld Lang Syne?
That's all right with me, Tom. Give me the beat on our arrangement of the song as you, and I'll see what I can do with it.
I hear music when I look at you, a beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew.
Back with Nancy Sinatra, the recording we just heard is featured on a CD that comes with her new book about her father. Did he talk to you much about this period of his life, leaving Tommy Dorsey, or what it was like to be with the big bands?
Yes, we really went into that in depth because a lot of the legend, the negative legend or myth about him has to do with his leaving Dorsey and how he managed to get out of that horrible contract.
What was so bad about the contract?
It was over a third of his income that was sort of held hostage by Tommy Dorsey for the rest of Frank's life, which I thought was just horrendous. And it was handled by, the breaking of the contract was handled by the top agents and lawyers in the business in New York. And, but the myth was that that mafia people, I don't even know who they were supposedly, but the myth was that these people went to Tommy Dorsey and made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Mario Puzo told me that he made up that line in The Godfather, that he'd never heard that about my dad or connected with my dad. But now, of course, everybody thinks it's his. The Dorsey contract, according to my dad, was almost impossible to break. So he really had to get some very strong attorneys in there. And what they did was they reminded Tommy Dorsey that he liked broadcasting on NBC. And these people represented NBC. And they said, if you want to continue to work for NBC, you're going to have to let this guy go.
So what was the next step for your father after he left the Dorsey Orchestra?
Well, one of the legendary moments of his life. He went to the Paramount Theater alone, but working for, alone meaning not connected to an orchestra, but working for or with Benny Goodman and his orchestra. And it was total tumult. I mean, the theater just, the way it was described to me was it felt like the theater was just going to come down.
When you were 4 years old, your father, I think he recorded Nancy with a Laughing Face.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, was it what, a present for you for your fourth birthday? Is that?
Oh, I don't know if it was a present. An interesting, sweet sidelight of that is that Jimmy Van Heusen, when I turned 16, he wrote the music for the song. He gave me his rights, his ASCAP rights,
really?
To the song when I turned 16. Isn't
what?
That dear?
that really is.
Isn't that adorable? I don't know if it was a gift for me when I was a little girl, but it certainly is a gift for me now. I love hearing it. Whenever I hear it, it brings a lump to my throat, you know. It's very sentimental.
Nancy Sinatra, recorded in 1995. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. And here's Nancy with a Laughing Face.
If I don't see her each day, I miss her. Gee, what a thrill each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case on Nancy with a laughing face. She takes the winter and makes it summer, but summer could take some lessons from
Major us. Funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873, and by the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. Additional support comes from Netcom, Internet access and web hosting solutions for small businesses. 1-888-NETCOM-3. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Let's take a boat to Bermuda. Let's take a plane to St. Paul. Let's grab a kayak to Quincy or Nyack. Let's get away from it all.
Coming up, we hear from the composer of this song, Matt Dennis, and the arranger of the recording, Billy May, as our Sinatra tribute continues.
Let's take a powder to Boston for chowder. Let's get away from it all. We'll travel round from town to town. We'll visit every state. I repeat, I love you, sweet, in all the 48. Let's go again to Niagara. This time we'll peek at the fall. Let's leave our hut, dear, get out of our rut, dear. Let's get away from it all.
travel round from town to town. We'll visit every state.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're remembering Frank Sinatra, who died last night of a heart attack at the age of 82. One of Sinatra's signature songs, Angel Eyes, was written by Matt Dennis, who we're going to hear from next in an excerpt of our 1995 interview. Dennis wrote several other songs associated with Sinatra, including Violets for Your Furs, Everything Happens to Me, and Let's Get Away from It All. Dennis first wrote for Sinatra when Sinatra was the singer with Tommy Dorsey's band, and Dennis was the band's staff arranger and composer. Here's Sinatra's 1958 recording of Matt Dennis's Angel Eyes.
Hey, drink up, all you people, and order anything. Have fun, you happy people. The drink and the laughs on me. Try to think that love's not around. Still, it's uncomfortably near. My old heart ain't gaining any ground because my angel eyes ain't here. Angel eyes, that old devil sent, they glow unbearably bright. Need I say that my love's misspent? Misspent with angel eyes tonight.
How did Frank Sinatra end up recording your song, Angel Eyes?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Jimmy Van Heusen, the famous songwriter, was a friend of mine, and he had done, he was preparing an album, producing it for Frank called Only the Lonely. And he talked, told Frank about the song, and Frank really liked it, so it was very nice. He accepted the song, and I was so pleased that he used it, and I was more than pleased because there were a couple of memorable times when his version of it was quite startling. I don't know if you recall, a few years ago in the 70s, he had made up his mind he was going to retire and
right.
quit the business, and he did a final concert at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. And his final song was Angel Eyes, and very dramatically, he had the lights go off on him as he walked off the stage at the end of the song, where he used my line, "Excuse me while I disappear." And as he sang that last line, he disappeared, and it made the papers, I think, all over the world. It was a strange thing. They thought Frank was giving it up. And, of course, old Blue Eyes came back, as we all know.
Did Frank Sinatra do anything surprising with Angel Eyes?
Yes, it was his idea to start with the middle of the song, like an attention-getting line of the song, where it said, "Drink up, all you people." And it was very strong, and it set an example because it was copied by other singers all over the place. Very emotionally strong. Then he did that out of tempo dramatically, and then he went into the main theme of the song. And, of course, he repeated the middle that he just sung in the construction of the song as he went through it. But it was just great the way he did it. Drink up all you people, order anything you see. it was like he was talking to people firsthand, and I think that really caught the people's eyes, you know, and ears. That's what caught it.
You started working with Sinatra very early in his career, in the early 40s when he was still with Dorsey. Did you have any idea that he'd go on to become as popular, as important, as good as he did?
Oh, yes. After the success of a couple of my songs with Dorsey, the writing was on the wall as far as I was concerned. Not only for my songs, but for the way he was doing things. Because he had a sound, and his sound was very smooth, and it was a sound that was bound to catch on.
I would like you to choose one of your songs that Sinatra recorded that you particularly like his interpretation of.
Well, of course, Angel Eyes is a favorite.
Of course, we've played that one.
The Violets for Your Furs that he made for Capitol actually was a turning point in his career. His records had slumped. You might have read the history of that period. It was in the 50s, and it looked like they were turning him off a little bit, the public. But he made an album called Songs for Young Lovers for Capitol Records with Nelson Riddle. It was his first album with Nelson Riddle's orchestra. And they became a team like he had with Axel Stordahl before Axel went on. And this album, where he did Violets for Your Furs, he had already done this with the Tommy Dorsey Band originally in the 40s, in 41. And it was a wonderful recording, and it was monumental as far as I was concerned, and the critics thought so too.
I bought you violets for your furs, and it was spring for a while, remember? I bought you violets for your furs, and there was April in that December. The snow drifted down on the flowers, and it melted where it lay. The snow looked like dew on the blossoms, as on a summer day. I bought you violets for your furs.
Composer Matt Dennis spoke to us in 1995 from his home in California. Coming up, we hear from one of Sinatra's arrangers, Billy May. This is Fresh Air. Frank Sinatra's great voice was given a great setting by such arrangers as Nelson Riddle and our next guest, Billy May. May worked with Sinatra on and off from the mid-40s to the mid-80s. He arranged Sinatra's albums Come Fly With Me, Come Swing With Me, and Come Dance With Me on Capitol Records. He did the arrangements for the Ellington Sinatra album on Reprise. On Sinatra's 1979 release, Trilogy, May arranged the section called The Past. They met in 1939 when May was playing trumpet and arranging for the Charlie Barnett Band, and Sinatra was singing with Tommy Dorsey. Let's hear one of the Sinatra-Billy May collaborations. Here's Come Fly With Me, recorded in 1957.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru.
In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away.
What's it like to write an arrangement for him? I mean, Sinatra has such great timing in his singing. So how would you use that to think about the timing that you wanted for your arrangement? Because you want to give him support. You don't want to get in the way, on the other hand.
Well, you've got to stay out of the way of him. That's right. But by the same token, you've got to keep things moving behind him and then give him a good lead in and give him a good relief when he stops singing and the band comes in, whether it's eight bars or whether it's just a little interlude, I try to make something out of it. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he ever have surprising ways of rewriting the melody in the way he'd sing it?
He's taken liberties with melodies all through his life. And the great thing about him is that he's got a great natural ear, and he not only sings well in tune, but he hears harmonic changes, which is everybody can't hear them. Fortunately, I have a little bit of that ability, and he hears it very well. And so, if he does make a change, usually it's very good musically. It fits what the composer had in mind.
How would you and Sinatra go about choosing songs for the sessions you did together?
Well, usually he had the songs picked. He had worked with the record company or with the songwriters or the combination of the both of them, and then I would sit down with Frank and with Bill Miller, his piano player, and we would work out what keys he felt he would like to do them in, try them maybe a tone higher, try them a little lower, and Then discuss the tempos and things like that, and that was it, you know, and then we'd go.
Did you do a lot of takes?
No, not on my stuff. He was a real fast one-take, let's-go-home style.
What about Sinatra sets him apart from other singers in your mind?
Well, I think I told you that I've known him for such a long time, and he was around the big bands back in the early days, you know. And in those days, the musicians had a great camaraderie, and he fit right in. All the singers and everybody fit right in with the musicians in those days. And he's kept that camaraderie. He's had that feeling for musicians right along, whether you're the arranger or the conductor or whether you're just a sideman. He's always been friendly and always considered the musicians. I think most of the musicians that work for him are very happy to work on the dates for him. And I think it reflects in their playing.
Arranger Billy May, recorded in 1995. Here's Sinatra's recording of the song as you, arranged by Billy May.
I hear music when I look at you. A beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I can feel it start, then it melts away. I hear music when I touch your hand.
beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day? I alone have heard this lovely strain. I alone have heard this glad refrain. Must it be forever inside of me? Why can't I let it go? Why can't I let you know? Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? Beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet and the words are true. The song is you. Let you know the song my heart would sing, that beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet and the words are true. The song is you.
And that ends our tribute to Frank Sinatra. He died last night at the age of 82. Coming up, John Powers reviews two new movies, The Horse Whisperer and Bullworth. This is Fresh Air. For most of their careers, Robert Redford and Warren Beatty have followed parallel tracks. Both were big romantic leads in the 60s and 70s, both were famous for their political liberalism, and both became Oscar-winning directors. In a strange coincidence, both men have directed and starred in movies that just opened. Redford's The Horse Whisperer is an adaptation of the best-selling novel, and Beatty's Bullworth is a political comedy set during the last presidential election. Film critic John Powers reviews both films.
Robert Redford's new movie, The Horse Whisperer, is an example of a big star playing it safe. It stars Kristin Scott Thomas as Annie McLean, a brusque New York magazine editor whose adolescent daughter Grace has a ghastly accident while horseback riding. Grace loses a leg, and her horse Pilgrim is both physically and emotionally scarred. Hoping to help Grace by helping Pilgrim, Annie drives the three of them out to the Montana ranch of Tom Booker. That's Redford, a so-called horse whisperer, who's able to get inside the minds of troubled horses. Predictably, he and Annie fall in love. The Horse Whisperer is being described as a women's film, a phrase that's never meant kindly. Personally, I find the picture insulting to women. Its heroine, Annie, is that favorite cliché, the bitchy, brittle career woman who's hollow inside. Just a few weeks in Montana with Tom Booker, and she's ready to chuck her whole life in publishing to become his moll. Even worse, the movie explicitly compares Annie and her daughter to Pilgrim. They're all wounded animals, you see. They all need Booker, who's able to heal the troubled mind of horses and women by giving them a rapt, soulful gaze, rather like the one Charlie Rose bestows on writers for the New York Times. The Horse Whisperer exists to glorify Booker, and by extension, Redford himself. scene after scene is the same. Booker takes charge, always does the right thing, and inevitably gets the last word, as when he tells Annie and Grace his conditions for working with Pilgrim.
I have to be honest with you. I still feel you've made a long trip for nothing. But before I even think about it, I need to know something right now. It's a question for Grace. You see, when I work with a horse, it's no good just me doing it. The owner's got to be involved, too.
Well, that'll be a little complicated.
You can make it as complicated or as easy as you like. But she's the one that's going to be riding him. Am I right? Hey, right? Now, here's the deal. I don't know that I can do anything. But I'm prepared to give it a go if you'll help. Well, you have a problem with that?
Isn't it, like, obvious?
Not to me. Either you want to or you don't.
Look, I'll talk to
Excuse me, with all due respect, this is her decision, not yours. Now, I don't want to waste anybody's time here. Mostly mine.
Booker behaves this way throughout the movie, which seems designed to refurbish Redford's image as the sensitive, romantic man of the West. And this self-aggrandizement doesn't stop with the dialogue. It's also present in the worshipful photography, which bathes him in flattering light and captures him in heroic Marlboro man poses. Once Redford comes on screen, the Horse Whisperer turns into a piece of reactionary kitsch. Put simply, this is the first male Barbra Streisand movie. Warren Beatty takes precisely the opposite tack in the new comedy Bulworth. He takes huge risks, and the result is his best and funniest picture in nearly two decades. The movie's set during the dreary 1996 elections. Beatty is Jay Bulworth, a Democratic senator up for re-election in California. Aware that he's a hack, Bulworth hates his life so much that he's hired a hitman to kill him. Under the pressure of this moment, he has a breakdown, or maybe a breakthrough. He starts saying what he actually thinks. His first outbreak occurs at a black church in L.A.
Any questions?
Riots and civil unrest went down about 4 years ago. You promised us federal funding to rebuild our community. What happened?
Oh, what happened was that we all knew that was going to be big news for a while, so we all came down here, Bush, Clinton, Wilson, all of us. We got our pictures taken, told you what you wanted to hear, and we pretty much forgot about it.
You say the Democratic Party don't care about the African-American community?
Isn't that obvious? You got half of your kids out of work and the other half are in jail. Do you see any Democrat doing anything about it? So what are you going to do, vote Republican? I mean, come on, you can have a billion man march. If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind somebody other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
From this moment on, Bulworth really cuts loose. And after a night at a black nightclub in Compton, he starts talking in rhyme, insulting corporate contributors, offending pro-Israel Hollywood bigwigs, and making a farce of a political debate. He even finds a love interest in Halle Berry's character, a smart, beautiful chick who talks knowingly of Huey Newton. Between his newfound honesty and his newfound love, Bulworth now has a reason to live. Unfortunately, he started a process that has people trying to kill him. Part of what makes Bulworth so fun is its star's willingness to scuttle his usual cool image. Beatty lets himself look old, and he's unafraid to be ridiculous, dancing around clumsily, rapping maladroitly, dressing in goofy hip-hop garb. Beatty's never been a man to let himself go, and you can sometimes see him struggling to seem loosey-goosey. But he does turn Bulworth into a memorable figure, a powerful man who must descend into madness in order to recapture his true sanity. There's something almost Shakespearean in such a trajectory, which has comic coincidences, sudden conversions, and even a wise fool, an old black man of the streets played by Amiri Baraka. Rather like Jackie Brown, Bulworth is charged with a white guy's fascination with the flamboyance of African-American culture. But where Quentin Tarantino is drawn to black style, Beatty's interest in black life is inescapably bound to politics. In fact, Bulworth is the first genuinely political Hollywood movie in years. Forget about John Travolta's loose zipper in Primary Colors, or Wag the Dog's breezy cynicism. This is a serious comedy about issues. How money runs politics. How black life has been decimated and our politicians don't really give a damn. How American discourse has become a big con game. Rich journalists covering rich politicians on media outlets owned by the rich. And it's a movie about how those in power will punish any politician who wins an audience by saying those things. I can't pretend that Bulworth is flawless. The hitman plot's badly managed, and the love story's unconvincing. But in a way, this doesn't matter, for both are ultimately a pretext for Beatty to say what he wants to say about race, money, politics, even the wretched state of current Hollywood movies. Just as Jay Bulworth's breakdown finally lets him talk sincerely, so this darkly exuberant comedy, one of the best in years, has allowed Beatty to pull off something that Redford didn't bother to attempt. He's made a movie that matters.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Phyllis Myers, Amy Sallet, and Naomi Person. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
I got the routine, put another nickel in the machine. Feeling so bad, can't you make the music easy and sad? I could tell you a lot, but you gotta be true to your code. Make it one for my baby, one more for the road. You'd never know it, but buddy, I'm a kind of poet, and I got a lot of things I'd like to say. And when I'm gloomy, won't you listen to me till it's talked away? Well, that's how it goes. And Joe, I know you're getting anxious to close. And thanks for the cheer. I hope you didn't mind my bend in your ear. But this torch that I found's gotta be drowned, or it soon might explode. So make it one for my baby, and one more for the road, the long, that long, it's long.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Netcom, Internet access and web hosting solutions for small businesses, 1-888-NETCOM-3. This is NPR, National Public Radio.